Welcome to Market View with Ike Iosa and Friends. This show that not only reveals and analyzes the inside story on today's market news, but also uncovers the areas where investors can make money right now.
Good morning. Mark Iosa, your host for Market Guest, my very good friend, Mr. Eric Haddick. Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good today, Ike. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Eric, I wrote your latest newsletter, in which, once again, you mentioned the 17-year cycle. And it does look like the market is tracking that cycle rather closely. So I would love for you to elaborate for our listeners.
Okay, well, let me give a brief history of my exposure to and use of that 17-year cycle. First started discussing it in some of my publications back in the late 1990s when I had seen it manifesting in the stock market. And at the time, I was more interested in the second multiple of it, 34-year cycle, and why I thought that the market could set a peak in the year 2000. It had a 34-year cycle from 32 up to the 66 high, 1966, and then the future high in 2000. But it wasn't until the mid-2000s when I started researching that cycle more and seeing how uncanny it had been in timing stock market declines of anywhere from 20 to 50%, and it often alternated every other 17-year cycle, whether it would be more like a 20 to 30% or more like a 35 to 50% correction. But I also noticed that there was a very strong correlation to Middle East conflict. And when you look at dating back to 1939, and you had the early stages of World War II, but also its impact on the Middle East, and you also had some related conflict there, and a stock market drop, and then in 1956, similar, we had the Suez Crisis, we also had a sharp stock market correction, then in 1973, the Yom Kippur War, and one of the biggest stock market drops of the last 50, 60 years until more recently. Then in 1990, it was about a 20% drop on the onset of Persian Gulf War. And so it was all coming to a head in 2007, and for about a year, year and a half, I was publishing articles and in my InsideTrack newsletter explaining why I thought that the fourth quarter of 2007 would time a multi-year stock market top and should trigger a 30 to 40% drop or more, and you know, history kind of validated that cycle pretty powerfully. And the next phase of that comes into play in 2024. And in my latest newsletter, I was just talking, I've discussed a lot of different applications of that 17-year cycle along the way. One of them has been interest rates in the U.S. and the real estate market and seeing peaks in 1989, actually before that in 1972, 1989, 2006, and then 2023, when I think we will have seen a multi-year peak in interest rates and real estate market. There's been other applications of it, but getting back to this latest discussion, I was just refocusing on that Middle East application to it, and even honing that a little more and focusing on events that surround Iran and Israel. And if you go back to 2007, you can see that, and that wasn't until a couple years later, but it was finally revealed and seen that that's when the Stuxnet worm was released into Iran's nuclear program computers. Wasn't really activated and triggered till a couple years later, but in many ways it was the introduction of much more sophisticated cyber warfare, and that just also reinforced that Middle East conflict cycle, which comes back in 2024, and like I said, more particularly Israel and Iran, and was just a little after that that we had the attack on the Iranian embassy compound in Syria, which I think Israel has not yet acknowledged responsibility for, but that seems to be the general consensus. And now everyone's kind of sitting around waiting for another shoe to drop with whatever Iran does in retaliation for that. But it was interesting to me, too, and I kind of discussed this in Inside Track since late 2022, that there were just a multitude of cycles starting in late 2023 that all had to do with Middle East conflict, particularly surrounding Israel. Most of the conflict there ultimately turns its focus there, even like when you had the Persian Gulf War in 1990, it was Iraq and Kuwait, but Iraq wanted to drag Israel into it, started firing missiles towards them. U.S. was pleading with Israel not to respond because they knew it would compromise the coalition of Middle East countries that had been. Bottom line is that is a recurring theme, and that's why from late 2022 all the way through the end of September 2023, I was discussing why I thought October 2023 would trigger a new wave of Middle East conflict surrounding Israel, and it was only a week and a half later that the attack from Gaza into Israel occurred and triggered what we have going now, and I think that's something going to continue. But as I said, there is this correlation to stock market declines of anywhere from 20-25% up to 40-50% on that same 17-year cycle. And if that repeats, the most likely time for that to start would be in the second half of 2024, if it's a precise 17 years, although for a cycle of that magnitude, there certainly should be given some latitude or some leeway as to the specific month or week when it takes hold. But it's just corroborating a lot of other cycles and a lot of other indicators and price movements and trends that are all saying that that there's a higher probability of a pretty significant top this year.
Eric, I was also fascinated when I read your expectation for gold, because I have to say I also expect gold to move higher into mid to late summer, but right now I'm looking at least for a short-term top. What are your thoughts?
Again, I'd have to go back a little bit to give some context for my current analysis, and one of those things was a consistent 7-year cycle in gold that told me to expect a major bottom, a multi-year bottom in late 2022, 7 years from the low in 2015, late 2015, 7 years from the low in late 2008, and so forth. And from there, I thought that we would see a multi-year advance in gold and silver. But as is often the case, the early years of those cycles don't usually see your biggest advances. That's when you're kind of building a base, you see some initial rallies, some indicators that start to turn from either negative or neutral back to positive, and it's setting the stage. From an Elliott wave perspective, you're kind of tracing out what they call a 1-2-1-2, where you see an initial advance, the one wave of a new cycle, and then an initial pullback. That's the wave two. And then on a little bit lower magnitude, you see another rally and pullback. That's the one and two of the larger three wave that's developing. And the bottom line is that it's more of a slow, steady progression. And that fed into subsequent cycles in late 2023, when I thought gold and silver would set secondary lows and begin to see stronger advances from there. I put out a couple of publications explaining why gold was destined to see a breakout to new all-time highs in 2024. And so we saw a rally from that October low into early December, filled a lot of upside targets at the time, ushered in some more consolidation. And then finally in mid-February, gold and silver triggered 1 to 2 month buy signals that I published in my publications and explained why I thought gold, which at the time was just above $2,000, why it minimum upside target for that 1 to 2 month period was a rally above 2,300. I had a fair amount of people telling me I was crazy. Gold just, you know, isn't going to do that. The king dollar will never let gold do that. And at the same time, my objectives for silver were to get above $27 and probably to 28 and a quarter as the initial/minimum upside targets for this 1 to 2 month advance. And we've just seen both of those targets hit as we came into late March. I explained why I thought gold actually should get up closer to 2350 during this initial surge. And we just hit those levels earlier this week, same thing, silver just got up to that 28 and a quarter level. I think that we're seeing a short-term peak, but my work is showing that we could still see, if a couple of criteria are met this week by April 12th, April 15th, meaning Friday or Monday, that if gold and silver pull back, hold certain support levels, and maintain one indicator that I follow closely, then they could see another surge into during the second half of April. It wouldn't surprise me to see another rally there, and then we'd be getting into that phase where we could see a longer lasting peak. Like I said, we've certainly fulfilled the minimum upside targets. We've initially peaked during a broader cycle top, but that cycle top spans a few weeks in April, so there's no guarantee that higher highs won't be seen, at least no guarantees until we see some sort of trend reversal signal triggered, which we have not seen. So I'm still focused on the bullish case and thinking that there's a chance after mid-April for another rally in gold and silver.
How about the dollar?
The dollar has been rallying along with gold. Again, it's something that I keep stressing to my readers, even though and listeners, even though I constantly get the feedback of how is that possible, especially when you're talking about gold priced in dollars, which all my work is based on, how can you have the dollar and gold rallying at the same time? Well, there's a couple answers to that. One is we're talking about the dollar index, which is the dollar versus a basket of many currencies. And the second is that often you will see the euro making a move in one direction or sometimes the yen. And if there's a strong case for them leading certain moves, and I'm not saying there is right now, but you'll often see gold and the dollar moving inversely to one of the other currencies. And or when you see times of geopolitical uncertainty, military conflict, you'll get safe haven buying of both gold and the dollar. So we've seen that with the dollar index rallying to new multi-month highs, even though it is still below its six-month peak, even as gold has been taking off. But if you step back and view the forest for the trees and look at just a gold-dollar relationship, the dollar has been dropping against gold since late 2015 and more so since late 2022. So when you're looking at that correlation or that comparison, the dollar is definitely weak. But when you're just looking at the dollar index, it's more a case of being, as they used to say, the healthiest horse in the glue factory, that all the fiat currencies are struggling, not only against hard currency, but now also against digital currency. And so the debt-backed currencies are struggling, and it could be an omen of things to come.
Any last thoughts on the bond market?
Well, just what I was talking about with that broader 17-year cycle impacting interest rates and even real estate values here in the U.S. and the effect that that has around the world. But in order to create some specific analysis, I'm focused on the U.S. real estate value and median home prices. But there's also a very consistent four-year cycle in bonds that helped time the peak in bonds in 2020. And I've been looking for a subsequent peak in bonds in July or August of this year. Of course, that would mean that they need to have a decent rally between now and then, which I think is still possible and still likely. We saw what was probably an A-wave rally late last year from the October low into late December. Now we're in kind of a B-wave correction that has been much slower and not consuming as much price as the advance did. So in other words, you know, in 2 months, we rallied far more than we have corrected in 3.5 months since then. But that should lead to a second bounce C wave of an overall ABC upside correction. See a C wave rally into July or August. And I think that bonds could set a peak at that time, probably a multi-month peak. But as I also explained in my recent monthly newsletter and some of the weekly relay publications, that high, that overall ABC upside correction from October 2023 into July or August 2024 is more likely to be the first primary stage of a longer consolidation period in bonds. And I give some specifics as to when I think the next 6 to 12 month low would be and when the subsequent 6 to 12 month high would be more likely. So I think that kind of like the perception is of interest rates, that we'll see some interest rate cuts out after mid-year or leading into mid-year, but that inflation's not going away. Other factors that could keep pressure on bonds and keep upside pressure on interest rates are still in the market, and there are some reasons why they could remain there. And even the factor that I think the dollar index has been in a topping phase and could see a more significant decline in between the second half of 2024 and the second half of 2025, that could also have its impact on interest rates and bonds as well as a host of other markets.
Eric, anything else you would like to add?
No, I think that's pretty good. I think sounds like a good place to wrap it up.
Eric, thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You do the same.